afternoon, everyone. Welcome to KUA's meeting of the March 3rd. Please join me in doing the Pledge of Allegiance to our flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic from which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Approval of our agenda. I understand there are changes.
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like the board to consider removing item F2, Boy Scouts of America sponsorship, from consent to old business for board discussion. Staff needs to clarify some language that was used in the agenda item as it relates to how those sponsorship dollars are being utilized.
Okay. I need a motion for that.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion approved.
I move approval of the agenda.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion approved. We go into awards and presentations. Brian, please.
Yes, Madam Chair. We've got three items under award and presentations this afternoon. The first is the APPA Reliable Public Power Provider designation, and it's my privilege to announce to the KUA Board of Directors that our utility is being awarded a Diamond designation, which is their highest designation in that program. RP3 program is awarded to public power utilities who demonstrate excellence in four key disciplines: reliability, safety, workforce development, and system improvement. This is the first time ever that KUA is receiving the Diamond designation. In prior years, we had consistently been at the platinum level, so this was a real achievement that was made possible by our employees. So I want to thank them all for their innovation and commitment. Specifically, our manager of, I'm going to embarrass him a little bit, our manager of transmission and distribution, Aaron Hadley. Go stand up so we can see, please.
Congratulations.
Aaron does a phenomenal job representing us at APPA on a number of committees, including the RP3. But I think it was you, Director Van Meter, a few months ago mentioned that, you know, we shouldn't chase this sort of stuff, and this isn't one of the ones that we were chasing. They make recommendations. Sometimes we implement them if we think it makes sense for our organization. Sometimes we don't. Aaron plays a key role in helping us assess that, and so it's a huge, wonderful achievement, and I think we're going to formally be recognized at the Engineering and Operations Virtual Conference with APPA later on this month. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Well, just outstanding, everyone. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you.
Got one service award, 15-year service award. Mr. Barbara Gonzalez, would you come on up here? Barbara is a senior financial analyst in our operations department. 15 years at KUA, so thank you so much for your service.
Thank you, Barbara.
Joshua Day, come on up here. Joshua Day is a warehouse clerk in our finance and administration department. He's being recognized as our March 2021 Employee of the Month. Joshua, this is what one of your employees or peers had to say about you. Joshua embodies the ideals of a warehouse clerk. Whenever something needs to be done or needs to be learned, he is always the first to have a plan of execution. He is proactive, and he never complains about another person's request of him, no matter how strenuous. Joshua is a go-to person. If someone is unsure of something, without hesitation, he always helps out. He exceeds expectations and always gets the job done. On a personal note, Joshua has been an outstanding mentor and has taught me everything I needed to know and then some. So I thank you for everything that you do for our organization, Joshua.
don't go away, Joshua. Congratulations, nice meeting you.
Director Van Meter.
Thank you so much for everything you do.
Thank you so much. Director Ortega.
You have a good day.
Mayor Gonzalez.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. Director Sanchez.
Congratulations. I'm the official valet. You get a parking spot.
Director Hemphill.
And I'm going to give you a day off of pay. Congratulations.
We go on to hear the audience. Is there anyone here who wishes to address the board? Please do so now. I guess there's no one there, so we move on to the next one. Consent agenda. Do I have a motion?
Motion to approve.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Anyone in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion approved. Public hearing. I guess there is none. Informational presentations. Brian, do we have any there?
Yes, Madam Chair. We've got two items now. I'm sorry. No. I apologize. No informational presentations. No.
Old business?
Yes, Madam Chair. We've got two. The first is the presentation of the 2020 strategic plan goal results. Almost 4 years ago, back in 2017, this board and executive staff participated in a formal strategic plan process. Y'all may remember that with Kathy V. And at the end of that process, we settled on three pillars around the strategic plan, and it was those three were improving the overall customer experience, maintaining excellent financial strength, and cultivating a great work environment. At the end of 2020 marked the completion of the third year of that plan, and today I've got staff here that's going to report on how we did with respect to meeting the goals for 2020. I'm pleased to report that we met most of the goals. There were two that we did not meet in 2020, and those two were directly related to the pandemic and the resulting economic downturn. But the vice presidents, when they come up here, they'll provide you a little more detail. Please keep in mind that when they're up here, they may be presenting on a specific goal, but a lot of the goals that we set cross departmental lines. And so if it's Susan in customer service, it may be, you know, she was involved with IT and operations and so forth. So I think we start out with Larry Mattern, Vice President of Operations. Oh, you want this, don't you?
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
Good evening, everyone. And get to our goals right away. And the first goal that we have here is to maintain system reliability, and that's reflected through our SAIDI, which is time off and how long the duration of outages, and then the frequency of outages, which is the SAIFI. And we achieved this goal. We were below 5% this year. We actually were 48% below in the SAIFI, and we were 21% below on the SAIFI. So we did very well this year, and this is a reflection of us having planning that we've done, everything from storm hardening. We're getting the payback from that, from doing what our next goal you're going to see is by replacing old underground. And we've actually made a reliable improvement committee that we study to see if there's other places for improvement. The weather helps us a lot on this, too. But the weather, our peers see that, too. But we've had a good year. And we've actually came down some minutes from the previous year. So we're improving.
We're also going to be installing some additional lightning suppression devices that we'll be talking about later on.
And then to maintain the system reliability, as we've just we have one of the things we're doing is we're replacing the underground. We've achieved that. The target's 37,500 feet, and we put 38,242. next year, yeah, we made it. And 0.7. I'm sorry, I didn't give you. But next year, we're going to look for a good round number of 45,000. And we'll try to hit that round number as close as possible for this presentation. And the reason that we've raised that number, we're starting a underground cable. They give the insulation a life of 40 years, maybe more, depending, but it's around 40 years. The move to underground with all the development to start in the 80s and the 90s is when we put a bunch of underground cable in. So now we're saying, well, we're getting on the reliability end of that on the insulation, so we're upping to 45,000 feet, and we may raise it as we go forward. But we want to be able to catch up and make sure we have good reliability of the older cable. Next, improve the customer experience with energy storage. And our goal was to explore and see if it's the time to do it now or not. And what we've decided by studying that, we've used data from National Renewable Energy Lab, which is a government-run United States government, also U.S. Energy Information Administration. And from that data, they've told us batteries like this would cost you $150 a megawatt. That would be with the charge all in, but that'd be a good true price, $150 a megawatt. Meanwhile, we're able to make megawatts today, K9, and today gas is $3.03. I'll give you all the exact numbers today. But the gas is running anywhere between the high $2 and $3. It came back from a couple weeks ago. And that gives you a $21 megawatt come out of Kane Island. So it's really not cost effective at this time. It's coming down, and we'll keep watching it. But at this time, we're not going to. We were going to do a project with Bridge, which we intended they paid the cost, so we could at least study how's it work, how's this going on. Of course, Bridge has backed off from their backing from UCF. Meanwhile, there's SkyWater is showing interest there, and if we see an opportunity with them where they're willing to take on a cost to study a battery, we will. And move to superior financial strength. This is a crossover one that other departments and operations look at. And what we have here is this is to say is there, we're going to lose capacity credits is what we get paid for our leases of our units down at Kane Island. And how are we replacing that? Well, we already have done some of it in action, not just in a study, which we've replaced, we replaced Unit 2 and 3. We extended our agreement with FMPA for the next 6 years, and we'll net $13 million from that. So that's one thing we have done. The other, what we're studying, but it's not right time to put it in, but it's an opportunity, is we've discovered we are listed by the Public Service Commission as a gas company. If we see an opportunity that, say, like at Neo City, if one of the bigger companies would come in and need gas, we've seen opportunities through FGU and others that we could exploit those opportunities by being a middleman and sell discount gas and make money. But that's something in the future, but we are looking at that. And is there any questions on the slides that I presented?
Any questions? Nope.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you, Larry.
Hello. Good afternoon. Okay, I'm going to report on some of these goals, and these goals are all interdepartmental. There is not a single goal that is solely customer service. So this first one, as you know, you've seen the smart pole out front. We did have the APPA deed grant. It's a research project for us, determining customers' interest in this type of technology and having these poles where you can have multiple components, where they can choose the components that they want. And everything is contained inside the pole as opposed to all these wires and everything else on the outside of the pole. So that's what we're doing, trying to bring aesthetically pleasing technology to our customers. The customers do like the ability to choose what they want, whether they want a camera or they want a light or they want an LED banner. So now we're just working to see how much they're willing to pay for that. So that was achieved. The second one, and you've seen this throughout the year, we did exceed this. We were going to yes?
Do you have a cost for one?
A cost? Mm-hmm. It depends on which components you put on it. So there is an LED banner, a sign where the customer can change the messaging. So, for example, if it was on the thoroughfare or the main street in Kissimmee, they could have hurricane evacuation route signs or events, and they control it remotely. Those are about $22,000. So it does depend on which components. If you want that, or if you want the security camera, or if you want different color lighting at the top of the poles that you can change for the different holidays and so on and so forth. So it really does just depend on which pieces and parts you choose.
Good. Thank you.
So thank you. Back to, this is our fast charging stations. And obviously, we're trying to provide our customers easy access to using our product in a new way in this new technology. So that's the whole purpose of this. We did exceed this, and so far in all of our EV charging stations, we've had 1,070 sessions, which means people have plugged in to charge in their vehicles. So it's exciting. It's picking up a little bit, slowly but surely. And you know where these are. One's at the courthouse, one's at the 7-Eleven. Near the turnpike exit, and one is near the City of Kissimmee parking garage. So that was achieved. This one was not achieved, and these were the level 2 charging stations, and the goal was to install 20. We now have 13 of them installed, but we have service agreements for 17 more. So we already have agreements to install 30. So this was delayed due to COVID. And customers being willing to jump into new projects like this during that time. We also have pending agreements for 14 more of these. So we are seeing a lot of increased interest in these level 2 charging stations. In fact, one was just signed today for 8 stations out at Academy Village. So we're very excited about that. That will be our largest single location. The solar energy project implementation, this was achieved. The goal was to deploy marketing education plan. This project just provides the opportunity for customers that want to support or participate in solar without the need to install or maintain their own system. So this was achieved. We marketed on bills, websites, social media. We had a lot of education planned for events, but events were canceled. But we did go ahead and share it virtually on energy audits, et cetera, so any contact that we did have with customers, even virtually. We have 176 locations of community solar right now, 62 unique customers. So a lot of those are City of Kissimmee accounts, so multiple accounts for one customer. So that was achieved. And then the last one, the deployment of the meters, and that was achieved, and we currently are at 82,626 meters have been deployed. Any questions for me? Thank you.
So 82 equals the number of customers we have, so.
We actually have more meters than that now. So we're up to, we have 2,400 more to go.
It changes.
Great.
It does change daily. It's we're chasing a rabbit.
Thank you. Any questions, anyone?
Good afternoon. Our goal of customer satisfaction was achieved at 90%, which accounts for both residential and commercial customers. We actually exceeded this goal. The measure used is maintaining a minimum of 86% rating on our customer satisfaction survey by measuring residents' opinions on KUA's various services, initiatives, and offerings, identifying opportunities to improve customer service, assist KUA in understanding the concerns and priorities of its customers and helping KUA make decisions that best reflect the goals and the needs of our customers. And our 2021 customer satisfaction survey began this week. We'll continue through mid-March, and the data and processing will begin shortly thereafter. We'll review the results with the research company in April, and those results will then be presented at our May meeting.
Can I ask you, what was last year's report?
Last year, in 2020, it was 91% for residential, and commercial was 84%. 2019 was 88% and 89%. So our community outreach goal was not achieved. KUA conducted 4 events in 2020. However, those 4 events did impact about 20,000 residents. Due to the coronavirus, we did not meet the target of 17 events. I do want to say, though, that we've already begun discussions with the City of Kissimmee to resume our Movies in the Park series in October. We've also participated in virtual events, such as the Chamber's Utilities Panel. Additionally, $40,000 in sponsorships and $10,000 in advertisements for those canceled events have been donated to the Council on Aging as well as the Good Neighbor Fund. And I'll take any questions if you have them.
Good.
Thank you.
Hello, Board.
Hello.
Some quick updates. Of course, achieved one of the IT, really a customer service goal, but of course, integrating a lot of what Susan and I do. We share in a lot of projects, and this one was one of them. The excitement of getting our portal launched, and then after that, soon after, getting some automated services going as well, where customers 24 hours a day can sign up for service. One of the most difficult processes that we have, lengthy in terms of time, typically done over the phone or if someone coming into the lobby, now available online, which was a big goal. A lot of complexity, but it's moving along, and we're even enhancing it more now that it's up and running. So glad to see that one achieved. That's just a quick screenshot of what it looks like when the customer does that initial clicking the button saying, I want to establish service with KUA, and then we start walking them through the validation of the address to make sure it's in our service territory, and on it goes with the process. Another big one, you're going to be hearing more about this in my grand finale that I'll be doing for the IT highlights later on, but the AMI customer portal as well with texting and alerts. Now, these texts and alerts are a little different than the kinds of things you'd see with an outage. These are the ones coming from the portal, where a customer can say, I would like to be alerted every time I use so many kilowatts per hour in a day, a month, a year, whatever number they're targeting. They can have that alert come to them once a day. It typically goes out in the afternoon based on the last day's data coming over. This is the gas gauge we used to speak about all the time, letting customers manage their power consumption, giving them alerts proactively based on their preferences, of course. It can be text or email. And that allows them, again, to not have that big surprise when their bill comes in. They've been watching their consumption come in by alert throughout the day or throughout the week or the month. And so far it's been working very, very well. And that was achieved back in March. And then on to outage reporting. There are different types of outage reporting. When we say reports, we're thinking of a customer letting us know that their power is out versus an outage alert, which is us telling the customer we're aware and we're on our way. Again, more on that later in my other presentation. But this was achieved back in January. It has been phenomenally successful. And we've also continued to enhance this beyond the initial goal, which you'll be seeing today. And that is it from me, I think, on outage reporting. And, of course, mission critical, the good old IT standard. Doing very well there, exceeding the goals for ourselves and those set by the board at 99.995. And that is continuing on to this day.
That's 99.95.
Yeah. Tiny. It's like if I'm out for 10 minutes, it's like, oh, there it goes for a whole year. Yeah. Any questions?
Very good. Thank you.
Any questions?
Madam Chair, good afternoon. To report to you today, you see these numbers that I'm sharing with you in your monthly reports that we provide to the board, and so we also obviously reporting on them today because they're part of what we share with you on an ongoing basis. But the good news is, for both of them, we were able to achieve the on the strategic year the ranking of the competitive 1,000 kWh residential rate in the bottom one-third of all the monthly FMEA rate comparison surveys. So that's a positive move. We track that along several different metrics, but for this particular goal today is the strategic year. And then my second piece is also something that you do see in our monthly report every year, is our move to financial strength. And that is, for the strategic year, we remain able to maintain a positive income while meeting all the fiscal policies set forth by the board. So, again, we're pleased to share that with you today. I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you. Thank you.
Good afternoon again, Madam Chair and board members. I'm pleased to report to you that one of our goals for 2020 is to comply with all applicable regulatory requirements to mitigate the financial exposure associated with penalties and sanctions. And I'm pleased to report that that goal is achieved. We have had no monetary fines or penalties assessed against us. That's actually pretty remarkable achievement when you consider the plethora of regulations that we're subject to. KUA is subject to environmental regulations, particularly that apply to our generation operations, our substations, our transmission distribution facilities, and our use of rights-of-way. Clean air, clean water, hazardous waste, all of those regulations apply to us. Identity theft and privacy protection requirements under the Federal Trade Commission's jurisdiction also apply to KUA. Wage and hour and equal employment opportunity regulations under the regulatory authority of the Department of Labor, as carried out by the Wage and Hour Board and the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. Those are regulations that apply to us, and we've complied in full. Pipeline safety regulations. Our great operators out at Cane Island operate the Cane Island Lateral, which takes gas from the wholesale pipeline network, the interstate pipeline network, and serves our units 1 through 4. We're subject to those regulations. We've done that well. Safety regulations. Because we're part of the city of Kissimmee, we are not subject to OSHA. There is a carve-out for local governments. However, we use OSHA as a guideline, occupational safety regulations as a guideline, and we've complied fully. And finally, the big enchilada, I would say, is reliability standard and cybersecurity regulations. We are subject to regulations issued by FERC, which is then managed by, ultimately, the Southeastern Reliability Corporation, CERC. And those regulations require us to operate our high-voltage transmission lines and our generating plants and related substations in a flawless manner. The fines that are possible for not being reliable are as high as $1 million a day. So it's great that we have 100% compliance on that. And finally, I think it's good for the board to know that at Brian's direction, I have carried out, with my able assistant Jennifer Gonzalez's help, a review of all 547 internal department policies and procedures, looking at them for consistency and compliance. These are separate from the policies we all looked at. That review is continuing, but we hope to wrap it up fairly soon. And I stand for any questions.
Any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you. Cindy?
Good afternoon.
Oh, goodness. Good afternoon, everyone. Again, hi. Gonna move on to. All right. Our cultivated great work environment goal was achieved. Our target was 4%, and we did achieve that at 1.02. This goal measures employees' departure from the organization, just confirming as we all get to experience on a daily basis that KUA is an employer of choice, and being able to retain our employees. This is definitely down from the previous year, but we did achieve that, which is great. Moving to cultivate a great work environment. This goal was achieved.
The measure, Cindy, is maintain employee satisfaction rating.
Oh, yes. Sorry. Measure, maintain employee satisfaction rating. Sorry. Thank you, Brian. This was a target of 93%. This was achieved at 95. And what this is, it's an important tool that is utilized and provided to all employees to be completed annually. So it's the survey, and this allows management to review and address employee constructive feedback that we get. So it's a very important tool that we have, and we do continue to improve. So we were since 2019, we have continued to improve in this area.
Cindy, a question.
Yes.
Is the survey volunteer?
Yes.
And everybody does it?
Excuse me?
Does everybody do it?
There is a high percentage of employees. It's not 100% because we can't make employees do it, but we promote it. Employees do truly engage and know that it's coming annually and do report on that.
So this 95% is based on the
participation,
on the number of people who participated.
Correct.
It doesn't really represent 95% of the company.
No, so it's the satisfaction of, yes, those that are reporting. Mm-hmm. Moving on to maintain workplace injury rate on this one here. This is our target was less than 5%, and we achieved this at 2.89. This goal captures our recordable injuries, and this is something that we take very serious and we track. I've brought this to you before also in my informational presentations. So, you know, we do support a safety-first culture, and it's evident. We do take measures to educate and train our workforce regularly, monthly, and situationally. So this is something that we take very serious, and I'm glad to report that being achieved. Next is maintain health biometric screening participation. There we go. The target was 42%. This was achieved, and I'm extremely proud of this one. You've heard me say this before. We had to, because of the pandemic, really my team, and I think my team, thinking outside of the box, using all the resources available, how can we still get this to our workforce, given that we're not all at work? And so this does, it just speaks volumes to not only the team, but the employees, their engagement and wanting and the importance of knowing to take advantage of this. So great, great that we were able to achieve this goal. And last one. So this was to update the company-wide succession plan. This was achieved, and it was achieved by the organization. So we reviewed and updated the succession metrics by all executive management. And so everybody underneath Brian then did it on their direct reports. So we were also incorporating this past year the Harrison Assessment, which assesses behavioral personality traits and work interests. So that was something that was incorporated this year, thus supporting KUA's planning efforts. So this providing valuable insights in identifying individuals and how they could, what they can build on. So that's how we did update our succession plan. And that's it. Any questions?
Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. Madam Chair, item I-2 was the amended agenda item.
Boy Scouts?
Yes, Boy Scouts of America and Tiffany Henderson, if you'd come up and speak to this item.
Good afternoon. We've received a sponsorship request from the Boy Scouts of America Central Florida Council in the amount of $7,500 for your consideration. KUA has historically sponsored the Boy Scouts of America since 1997 at various levels of sponsorship. Since 2014, the request has been at $5,500, and in 2019, the request was increased to $7,500 to accommodate rising event costs and larger number of scouts within the county. We want to clarify how the sponsorship dollars are being used. The sponsorship funds go toward supporting 25 scouts in 1 year, in addition to a diamond level sponsorship at their annual Golden Eagle dinner. There are currently 31 Boy Scout PACs and troops in Osceola County. Last year, those 31 programs represented about 1,600 Osceola County youth. Their numbers have been significantly impacted because of COVID-19, but they hope to increase that once things pick up by the end of this year, and they're hoping to get back to about 1,200.
Are we to vote on the amount, or are we to...
There's a request for $7,500 from Boy Scouts of America. And the reason it's coming to you is because it's above the $5,000 level. We pull the item, and I give credit to Director Hemphill, who discovered it when she read the item. She said, "Well, Brian, does all $7,500 go to the Eagle Scout the Eagle Scout dinner?" Because that's the way it read, and so we pulled it because of that. In addition to that, we had some conversations with the Boy Scouts of America, Central Florida, specifically about some of the controversy that the national organization is involved in. And would you provide just an update on that discussion as well?
Sure, yes. So I did have conversations with the local troops about some of the challenges that the national organization as a whole is facing. Their response was that they are both financially and legally separate from the national organization. That being said, symbolically, however, they are still under the umbrella of the Boy Scouts organization. And so we did ask them what they're doing, and they reassured us of their rigorous application process for all adult troop leaders that includes youth protection training, background checks, and volunteer database checks, and things like that. So we did have some of those conversations prior to this.
So are those motions or questions?
Questions.
Okay, Jeannie.
So we supported 26?
25.
That went for the awards?
So the sponsorship supports 25 scouts for 1 year.
$7,500 for 25
scouts? In addition to the diamond level sponsorship at their annual dinner.
So we give them two sets of dollars for the scouts and for the dinner, or it includes?
It's inclusive.
So the difference, I'm sorry, the difference between the 5,500 and the 7,500 doesn't change the number of scouts. It's just cost of living increase.
That was for the request. So since 2014, they've requested $5,500, which we've given them. And then in 2019, that went up to $7,500. And so that does make a difference on the number of scouts that are impacted, yes.
Right. One of the things that I'm concerned with is some of the comments that different board members have had that have attended these dinners. From a community standpoint, I would like to see whatever dollars they're given go to supporting the individual scouts and not the dinner.
I agree. You had a question, Manny?
It appears that you did a lot of studies and reviewed the whole proposal. What is your recommendation? What's the staff recommendation that we normally would vote for? What's your recommendation on this request?
After talking with the Boy Scout Central Florida Council, they did. I also talked about some of the issues that that we had with the dinner, and they also said that they would be modifying their presentation so that they're not requesting additional dollars to organizations such as KUA that have already contributed to their organization, and so they would be removing the pledge cards from KUA's table. So staff's recommendation is to continue the longstanding relationship that we've had with the Boy Scouts of America Central Florida Council.
At $7,500?
Correct.
You had a question, Mayor? Olga, did you have a question?
No.
Oh. Eugenie?
I would like to know exactly how that $7,500 is spent. Is it for just dinner and 25 scouts? And if we do not sponsor the dinner, would that go to more scouting, more scouts?
So the $7,500 would still impact 25 scouts.
Well, what is the dinner? Our participation in the dinner, what does that do?
It's probably hundreds.
So it's different levels of sponsorship. So, for instance, if the board decided to sponsor, have a $5,000 sponsorship level, that would decrease the number of scouts that were impacted.
So the $7,500 does go to more than 25 scouts?
No, it's just...
I'm having a problem with 25 scouts get $7,500. Is that what's happening?
Correct. That's as it is right now. If we were to give $7,500, it would impact 25 scouts.
Regardless of whether or not we go to the dinner or dinner.
Correct. Correct. Mm-hmm.
Manny.
Go ahead.
I mean, Ray.
So, point of clarification, the $7,500 for the 25 scouts, is that going to be $300 a scout? Or is a portion of that allocated to the dinner and the balance affects the 25 scouts?
We would have to speak to get that level of detail. I would have to go back and ask.
That's a big difference. If the dinner is a set cost for the Diamond membership and then whatever the balance remains goes to the 25 scouts, it's $7,500 divided by 25 is $300 a scout. But if they're not getting $300 per scout, it's a remaining balance of what the dinner is. I would have a hard time understanding that.
Might I, in hearing the discussion that the board is having, I'd request that you allow staff to go back and have some additional conversations with the Boy Scouts of Central Florida and possibly have one of their representatives come in to speak to how the actual funding on their end is dispersed. That would be my ask of the board. Yes, ma'am.
We know how many total scouts are involved in Osceola County?
So last year at this time, it was about 1,600, but due to COVID now, it's about 530.
Wow. It's not very many, well, is it?
Okay, Ray, go.
In 2020, there was no formal dinner. I would be interested to know how that money was then spent.
To my understanding, they did have a virtual dinner where KUA was recognized, and that it was the same Diamond level sponsorship that they're requesting this year that would affect the 25 scouts.
But there was no dinner. There was no cost for people to have a meal.
Correct.
So that money went somewhere.
Correct.
I would like to know how that was used. Did it go to sponsor more scouts? What happened to it?
To my understanding, that full amount went to the 25 scouts.
Ray, go ahead. Ray.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Madam Chair, I would agree with Brian. I think at this point, there's so many questions that are being raised. The district executive, I believe, is the title for Central Florida Council. Mm-hmm. If they're able and willing to come and maybe clarify some of these questions in real time with their stats, I think it should be tabled until that can happen.
Manny? You had a question?
I'm just saying, I'm assuming these 25 kids are probably underprivileged kids. I can't afford to
pay
an annual fee or camping equipment and so forth. Mm-hmm. So even at $300 a person for a year, for a child, if you consider if they have a two-week camp or a week camp and everything else in a normal condition, that's probably a reasonable rate to because
house
uniforms mm-hmm. and everything that's associated with being a Boy Scout, I believe that that could be a reasonable way. But it'll be nice to hear because I'm off.
Yeah, what I was going to say too, and I agree, I guess, with both, is that we can probably have someone come in and give us a presentation like they normally would do, but I wouldn't want the kids to suffer because of how long it may take for them to come. And in the meantime, what's going to happen? When do we give them the money?
Their dinner is April 27th.
So it's possible the dinner will happen before they would come, right?
Yeah, why don't we see if we can get them here for the April board meeting before their dinner?
Okay. So there is no need for a motion. We take it out of the agenda, okay?
We'll bring it back.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so what's next? New business staff meetings.
Yes, we've got two staff reports this evening, this afternoon. The first is the quarterly financials for first quarter of FY21, and here to give us that report is Kevin Crawford.
Thank you, Brian. Madam Chair, December 31st, 2020, our first quarter of this fiscal year. Wanted to provide you how things were going so far financially. 21 budget of sales was 395. I'm happy to report that we've exceeded our budgeted sales for that quarter at 404, and we've also exceeded our prior year sales in megawatt hours. So good news on that front. Also, we have been able to achieve positive financial strength by achieving positive net income while meeting all the board's fiscal policies at $14.6 million, which we'll get into in a little bit of detail later. 21.6 is our rating of the bottom one-third of all the 1,000 KV residential rate bills across the state of Florida. We also were able to draw $7.5 million out of the rate stabilization instead of what we'd anticipated using, which was a deposit. And again, we just take the annual number divided by 12, and this is not an anomaly. We typically pre-fund our capital expenditures at the beginning of the year, and so when we do that, we draw it out of rate stabilization. Put it into the capital fund. And then the negative number at the bottom is what we were actually able to deposit at FMPA, their rate stabilization fund, so that we can use that in our higher megawatt hour sales months, higher cost months for our customers. So what you're seeing here is nothing unusual. It's typically what happens at the beginning of the year, setting aside some of that money for rates, but then using the other part to pre-fund our capital expenditures for the year based on the budget that you approved in July. And so just a kind of an overview on how rate stabilization was used for this first quarter. Then metered sales revenue was $58.9 million. That was a budget. We actually achieved 60.3 sales actuals for a $1.3 million variance. So that's a positive 2.29% variance in revenue sales. So that's good. Rate stabilization fund transfer that I just spoke to you about, we budgeted a deposit of $122,000. We actually used roughly $7.5 million for a variance of $7.6 million. Again, not an unusual thing to occur at this point in the year. Total operating revenue, then, if you add all of those together, we end up with a budget of 47.9. We actually achieved 57.2 in operating revenue. And again, that's largely attributable to the fact that we pulled in that deferred revenue of rate stabilization into the income stream. And so that gives you that positive variance of the $9.3 million that you see there for total operating revenue. Demand charges were a little bit less than we'd expected, about $1.3 million. And then energy charges also were a little bit less. As we shared with you in this first quarter, gas prices continue to be low, and our fuel expenses continue to be less than our, and purchase power than what we had budgeted. And so we achieved a positive variance along both of those lines. And then there again is just another mention of the fact of the $1.2 million that we were able to put into deposit it at FMPA for future use. Again, when our bills start getting higher in the warmer months, that money is set aside to help our customers defray those costs of their utility bills. Then our total fuel and purchase power, we expected to have an expense of $29 million. We actually were at $26 million. So that's a $2.8 million variance there, positive. And then you take that first page minus the second page, and that gives you an $18.8 million budgeted amount of operating revenue less fuel and purchase power. The actual, again, attributable to the rate stabilization usage, is about $31 million roughly, for a positive variance of $12.1 million. Looking into the departments, you see that there's really no big stories there. Everybody is first quarter coming in a little bit under budget, some a little bit of false anomalies. We expected a 9.9 expenditure, a 9.3 was the actual total of a $650,000 positive variance. The only one I draw your attention to there would be the IT budget. As I think I've shared before, in the first quarter, IT tends to pay a lot of their maintenance contracts at the beginning of the fiscal year, and some of the bigger ones come in. I looked at that on a quarter-to-quarter basis. Month-to-month, I think in December, they had a big hit for one. I think it was a CIS bill, Jeff. And then, but if you look at that comparing last quarter to this quarter, the true variance is only about, it's less than $100,000. So within those first 3 months, they pay a lot of those bills. They don't always come in at the same time or the same month, but typically we get those in the first quarter. So, but by the end of the year, what you'll see is typically those all regulate out to what we expect them to be compared to budget. So doesn't, you know, nothing, no surprises really there. And now net operating revenue then, $8.9 million budgeted, actually at $21.6 for our actual. And that gives us a variance of a positive $12.7 million of net operating revenue. Then on to the next page, which is all the other miscellaneous expenses that aren't attributable directly to any one department. But these are all, you know, taxes, intergovernmental transfers, insurance, things like that. And so when you take all of those out, and again, all of those very close to what they should be on budget, no surprises in any of those categories or expense lines, we expected a budget net income, which is what we call change in net position here at KUA, $2 million budgeted, but we actually ended up with 14.6 for this first quarter for a positive variance of $12.6 million to net income. Again, that will get a lot closer to what you saw in the budget toward the end of the year. This first quarter, you know, has some things moving around, but you'll see that level out. What you didn't see is, as I mentioned earlier, that rate stabilization that we're, you know, pulled from for capital. Well, we'll start to build that back up. And so summer months, you'll see us drawing on it again because we'll be using that to offset our customers' bills as it was designed to do through the COPA mechanism. So then moving into the investment portfolio, no surprises here. You know, the Feds have lowered the rates, and that was back in spring of last year, and then they took another dip for the Fed funds rate. Federal rates continue to be very low, and as you know, that drives investor rates, what you're able to get on actual returns for we invest our money. Our primary focus on investing, and I'll show you this on the next slide, and I think I've shared this with you before. We're not chasing yields. We're not trying to get, you know, high percentage returns. We want the best we can, obviously. But capital preservation and liquidity are the two most important components for us as we manage our money at KUA, because we're going to make sure that, you know, we invest in vehicles and instruments that are approved by state statute, which we have to follow. And we also want to make sure that not only is it invested properly, but is it ready and available? Because you can invest in longer-term instruments and get a higher rate of return. But if you have an unforeseen expenditure and you need to get that money and sell that investment vehicle, then you can take a loss on it, and we prefer not to do that. So we manage it as close as we can to what our actual needs will be in terms of expenditures. And that's really the entire financial report. No real surprises of any kind, but I'm happy to answer any questions that you all might have.
It's good. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Hold on, Kevin.
Information technology.
Okay. Madam Chair, we've got one more staff report, and it's Mr. Jeff Gray, Vice President of IT's semi-annual report.
Hello again. I'm not as soothing as Kevin. I'm more alarmist. Let's just fire off right away with our e-bill adoption rates. Y'all know I love to just dwell on this forever, but we're doing great. 57% of our customers have opted into e-bill, way above industry averages, but I still think we can hit 70, maybe 75. But we will see these numbers slow as we hit that absorption rate. There's just only so many folks who are going to, you know, go with us on the e-bill journey. But fantastic numbers, very happy with that, and we continue to work at making this a great experience for our customers. We have a capital project underway. The good news is that the project is ahead of schedule by almost a year due to some technological advances that we were able to sort of marry up while we were putting it in. And we also were able to give back in terms of capital roughly $55,000 of that project, which was $125,000 to begin with. We were able to say, you know what, we've got another system that can do that. Let's skip that piece, which was wonderful. So we got a project ahead of schedule, under budget, and this is the new key cards that everybody will have. There's a known risk to key cards, the older technologies where people can, you know, duplicate them and so forth. And we were ahead of schedule in getting this programmed out and getting it into a capital project some years back when we started, because we could see that was going to be the norm. And this, of course, will address that very issue with newer, more high-tech cards to ensure our security, both in terms of employee security and, of course, the equipment security will all be not necessarily state-of-the-art, but much more secure than it is today with a better level of encryption. Looking ahead, DDD, just around the corner in April. Hurricane season is a-coming, June 1st, and we'll probably see a few storms this year. Slightly above average is the current recommended stance, I think, coming out of NOAA. But they usually start refining their hurricane models as we get closer to the season. We are going to be having our drill. This is a slightly different style of drill, but we are coming out of COVID. We may not be ready to do all the full mock disasters we like to do, where everybody's doing first aid and you have a lot more sort of animation of people interacting. But we can still prepare for storms, of course, and we're going to do that as much as possible on April 15th. Cybersecurity, always a popular subject. We continue our weekly scans. These are the vulnerability scans that we get from CISA, from the federal government, at no cost, which is great. That is every known permutation, whether it be real in the wild, as they say, or just a theoretical risk that you may have. They scan for everything that they can get to and then give us a report. And we typically, as soon as something is identified as a new or emerging risk, we get right on it and get that report back down to zero. That's our ongoing goal for ourselves, is to keep that at zero. But we've also got a penetration test going on. It's going to be starting in the next, probably in the next week, and it'll last for about a month. And that's where they try to break in both externally and internally, where we will take the, it's a little bit of a wear that they're going to give us, and we're going to install it, and it's going to see what it can get into as if someone had broken into our systems, like an employee, for example, or a bad actor is the phrase they like to use. So a bad actor has gotten inside our building and is now launching an attack against KOA. What can they get into, and can they get out? Can they send out a beacon, if you will, to the bad guys and say, I'm in, now come infect the network? So we're going to test all of that. We're eager, of course, to see, did we get it right, and how are the results of the test? We're optimistic, but at the same time, you want to find things broken. You want to see that, there were some things we didn't know about, because that's the best time to find them, is while you're looking for it, not when someone sneaks up on you and now you've got a ransomware situation. End-user training, this is probably the biggest, most overlooked part of any security program, because it is that one employee who clicked on an email and then ransomed the whole network, right? It always happens at that lowest level, unsuspecting. It's rarely ever just, you know, someone broke into our network from the outside. That's a very, very rare occurrence. It's usually the employee who clicks something and now you've got a problem. So we send out an email once a month that's like a trick email, and we monitor who clicked it. You know, and it's not about, busting anybody. It's about teaching them how to be vigilant. So the moment they click it, they know, okay, you just fell for it. And we let them, we give them something somewhat friendly to say, you shouldn't have clicked that. Now here's a 5-minute video on what you shouldn't have done. And if they keep failing, then we've got longer videos and longer classes to maybe get them there. But end-user training is a very important part of what we do. in terms of cybersecurity preparation. Now, the new vector, you're going to hear this term a lot, supply chain. Everybody's really into supply chain now. I've seen presidential documents that have been released recently about supply chain. And it starts off with things like we should source our medications from within the country and not from foreign governments and so forth. And it starts there. But it also works its way into cybersecurity quite a bit because we end up being our brother's keeper. We have to know if anybody is connected to our network long term, well, then we need certain assurances that they're also following the best standards and so forth because we are letting them in, so to speak. So that's a new thing, and I think we're going to have to develop an entire program around this because it's very broad. It's not an extra duty. It's probably going to be someone's job all day to go through logs and look for these things and try to catch a potential issue with someone outside of our network who we're letting in. So more to come on that. We're still learning and educating ourselves on all the different ways it can be used. But an example of why that's so important, if you heard anything about this SolarWinds hack that's been going on, SolarWinds is a software that's used to monitor networks. Very popular. It's on a lot of government systems. In fact, almost all. Everybody uses SolarWinds because it was one of the best. But this monitoring software has admin rights. It can see everything in order to give you good reports. So some clever hacker figured out how to get into the administrative rights of the core and now can get into anybody's system. We have SolarWinds. We were not affected by this particular issue. We didn't have that particular vulnerability on our systems. But, of course, we turned our stuff off, too, while they sort through it and figure it all out. And now we're ready to turn it back up after doing all the updates that they recommend. But that's a classic example of supply chain issue, right? It's someone that you trusted to come into your network and everybody uses them. They must be okay. And now they're in there creating accounts. And they're still finding out what might have been done under that particular hack. So big mess, but that's another supply chain vector. Okay, moving away from the technical stuff for a moment, I want to talk about this.
Question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I know that around the Super Bowl time, there was a water plant over around Tampa that was...
hacked.
Well, they got a little bit hacked there. Is KUA in any way vulnerable, and how would you be checking that?
That particular vulnerability was a SCADA control. SCADA is the thing that controls operation systems, a little different than the IT that you see on my side where we're doing, you know, corporate things like email and all that. SCADA controls are actually things that turn systems on and off. Now, this was a water utility. And that was the particular hack was they were actually in a SCADA control that dumped a certain amount of lye into water to purify it. Mm-hmm. And they, of course, amped it up so that it would dump too much and then, you know, potentially poison people right when the Super Bowl is going on. And so that's a typical SCADA hack. How would we know if we were hacked? First of all, we don't allow any of our systems to be remotely connected from the Internet. We air gap, as it's called, all of our SCADA controls for the entire electrical grid. There is no Internet access. There is no hacker who can get in and then turn, you know, fuel pumps on at Kane Island or anything like that. We air gap 100% of that, and that's always been our stance, is if you can't get to it from the web, the only way you could get in would be internally. And then from there, of course, here comes key cards and, you know, employee access and background checks and all the other securities that we put in place to prevent it. Nothing is 100% preventable, but there are certainly best practices, and we apply all of those to our SCADA. Other questions? All right, let's talk about home. 87% of KUA's customers are residential. 87%, that's 74,000 homes, 74,000 families. When we say accounts, I think it's a little, you know, it's a little vanilla, but it's literally all those folks living in those homes. And if you look at what's been happening in terms of COVID, and the paradigm shift that we're experiencing right now as a result of COVID, we're seeing the home being transformed and also to the school. And it's also becoming the workplace. In fact, we have several employees here who've worked from home for quite some time. So looking at that, and I could also add on a lot of graphics here with it's also the restaurant and the movie theater and the, you know, the play area. That's a home now. It's multi-purposed in many ways. So the service of electricity to this central point in the lives of those 74,000 customers who were at home becomes even more critical today than it used to be. And we met a few years back. Remember, we talked about what is it that we're in the business of, and it was the quality of life that we add to our customers through electricity. But that is now even more tantamount than it was before because of all the things. The kids can't go to school if you don't have power. You can't work and, of course, the normal things from a home operation. So that essential service, focus on the customer is always a big part of IT and customer service and operations and all of this. But I'm going to share with you now the things we've been working on that focus on this part of our business because I believe it's the most timely. And since this is the highlights report, we'll look at that. So starting off, of course, AMI. Susan stole all my thunder last month, told you all about AMI, so it left me nothing to tell you. But there are a few things coming that are exciting. The first one, and these are all on target and ahead of schedule in some cases, in the 2021 strategic goals. And the first one is this automated process for reconnecting on payments. Now, I'm going to give you a scenario. Person is a shift worker. They come home late at night. Maybe it's 1 or 2 in the morning. They forgot to pay their bill. Okay, they got distracted. They forgot to pay their bill. Now their lights are off. In the old model, in the old K way, if you will, they would have to call in to dispatch, maybe try to make a payment electronically, give a receipt number. It was a very cumbersome process. We had to roll a truck. It was going to be quite some time before you got your power back. In the new model, because we have AMI and because we've been able to integrate AMI with various systems, we're now going to be looking for a way, which will be done probably in just a few months, where we can see that payment on that account that's been disconnected. And automatically, as long as the payment meets their criteria, which is a full payment, automatically turn the lights back on for that customer without having to be interacted with by any human hands. It will just come back on. So imagine that same person who just got home 1 o'clock in the morning. They're tired. They pull out their phone. They pay their bill. Or they go to AmScot. It'll work there, too. And their lights just come back on just like that. Much better quality of life, again, for that essential place where home and school and everything is so important now, right, because it's all in one place. So that's just one of the things we're doing with AMI that's coming soon. Single sign-on, this was something that Director Hinful mentioned she would like to see within the portal, which was on a long-term track, and it's coming closer, sooner. Can't give you the exact date yet, and that's where you log into our portal, and your bill payment is there, your consumption is there, everything about K-Way, it's basically your account. When you go to Verizon or AT&T and you log into those accounts to do things with your phone bill, you see your device, you see all of the information about you personalized, and that's what the portal is going to bring us. And one sign-on will do it all. So that's coming soon. We're also going to connect all that wonderful AMI data, that avalanche of ones and zeros that are coming out of there, and we're going to connect that into our outage management system. So our ability to detect outages, to know about outages, is going to be enhanced and incredibly fast. What will that bring us? Well, I'll talk more about it in a moment, but what it's really going to do is let us tell customers when the lights go off, we know we're on our way. This is how long it's going to take. And if it changes, we're going to give you an update. And when we're done, we're going to send you another text message that says, we should be finished. If we're not, if your lights are still off, just text out and we'll take care of you from there. So it's not a matter of I need to call the electric company when the lights go off anymore. We're going to already know and be alerting you of what's going on. It's a very big different KUA than it used to be in that regard. But we're still going to, of course.
Is that done on their phone?
Yes. And I'm going to go into a whole lot more on that. I don't want to burn too much time on it, but it's very exciting. But we're still going to preserve the idea that if a customer wants to call us when the lights go off, they can. We're not going to turn that off. We just want to be as proactive as possible to let them know because they need to make plans, right? If it's going to be 2 hours or if it's going to be 5 minutes, I need to know because I've got work, I've got kids here trying to go to school, and I've got something on the stove, right? So that's all coming as well. And eventually an app version of our portal, which will offer a much more visually pleasing wrapper when you're on the phone and trying to go through these screens. They've got that optimized. It looks great. But we want all the functionality that we're building into the portal to be identical on the app, and that's going to take a little more time. So more on that later. All right. In one of the meetings recently, we talked about converting the bill to Spanish. And so we realized we could make a stopgap in a very short amount of time, and that was what you're seeing here. Now, these little circles that you're seeing all over this sample bill would be like sort of moving and drawing attention to themselves on the screen. But what it allowed us to do was say, let's take a sample bill, put it on KUA.com, and let's put attention on all these areas where customers generally have questions. And customer service folks got together with Susan, and they gave us all the language of how they would explain a bill to a customer. But now it's 24 hours a day on this website. And it can take you with text links to something else. If, example, if you want to see more about the portal, here's a link. It'll take you to the portal. If you want to understand more about when your bill is due and how that works, videos, all can be linked from these little circles that you see here. And with the discussion we had, I think it was just the last board meeting or maybe the one before about, you know, can we put the bill in Spanish? We thought, well, this would be even more dynamic way while we're working on that project to give the customers that same personal care where I go through the entire bill with you and show you everything and let you do it in the language of your choice, not just Spanish, but all the languages available in the Google Translate app. So we can actually allow the customer to go, click the language they choose, and now when they hover over one of these circles, they're going to get that information in the language of their choice. So we have a nice, it's a very smooth-looking interface, but it also allows anybody, whether your primary language is English, Spanish, Portuguese, you can go ahead and get that information directly to you. And that's up and running right now at KUA.com/built.
Very good.
Let's talk a little bit about all those systems and acronyms that I'm always spouting. We have quite a few, and I won't go through all of them, but each system sort of has a unique purpose. One is for taking calls and one for customer service and different departments. And as I keep going, there's a system on the left and a service that it provides on the right. And what we found when we were looking at all of this was between all of those systems, there's a bit of a crossroad. And what if we just wrote some code in-house at no cost, using the skill of our developers and the knowledge of many of our staff, to make an interface that would allow us to communicate with our customers more efficiently. In fact, to have an entire hub, if you will, where we can see the text messages and the emails and know how many we sent out and who do we send it out to. When someone claims they never got it, can I look up that text message and see it and how many times we sent it and so forth? Well, we can do that, and we built that. It's called the Customer Communication System, or CCS, and it exists sort of in an ether between those two systems or two sets of bubbles that you see on the screen. And we were so proud of it and so excited about it that we made it one of our strategic goals, and it's now launched ahead of schedule, which is great. And what it allows us to do is talk to our customers in their choice of language, English or Spanish, with text messages, with notices, information, and so forth, whether it be outages or a late payment that's due, and so forth. So how does it work? Well, some of this stuff is going to be familiar to you. These are the systems that are out there. For example, the dispatch outage reporting, that was finished a year ago. We finished that almost 1 year ago exactly, where a customer could type out on a text message and report their outage. Great. Of course, billing now sending email notices to customers to remind them that they're now late. Because so email can get there faster than the paper mail. So giving you more days ahead to plan to pay that bill that is now overdue and, of course, avoid being eligible for disconnect. The consumption alerts that I mentioned from the portal back when we were talking about our goals, that ability to get a text message telling you how much electricity you've used, another form that's going through CCS. And then the e-bill, good old reliable e-bill with a very high customer rate using it. But there's more than that. There's all this stuff that sort of appeared once we started integrating this system together and weaving together CCS. For example, now we can send a reminder the day before we start doing disconnects and drive people to pay before their account goes into default. Wouldn't it be great to allow it to remind the customer so that now your account stays in good standing? No disruption for you, no power going off, no disruption in that home. You're just being given that one little friendly reminder, and we're seeing some of the lowest numbers so far. It's too early to get a real trend, but some of the lowest numbers ever in disconnects. Imagine that. Outage alerts, of course, we've got the ability for the customer to tell us that the outage alert that they have their power out, but they can also get the alerts, as I described, where we're telling them the power's out and when it's going to be back on. That's the outage alert feature. And, of course, collections as well, being able to send reminders, whether they're getting a reminder for being late or they had an extension where they agreed, we agreed with them that we give them a week or more to pay. Well, hey, that week is now up and tomorrow is the day, and we just want to remind you, friendly reminder. And the customers seem to embrace this. It doesn't feel like they're being pushed in any way. And then finally, this was one of Tiffany's ideas, was social media. Can we do something on social media for things like outage reporting? Can you report your outage from Facebook, you know, and things like that? And a lot of people said, oh, it's a bad idea, doesn't work. But, of course, we kept going. And I told her it was a real pain to figure it out. But we got it to work, and I'm going to show you that in just a second. And, of course, English and Spanish. So I'm talking a lot about this, right? Text message this, text message that. I'm like, text Jeff. I'm always describing this thing. But this is why, okay? Never in our history have we had a form of communication that under 3 seconds have read their text message already. Why is that? Because you're already on your phone, right? We're in and out of that phone all day long. So it's not a surprise that 90% of those text messages get read that quickly. 95% read in under 3 minutes. 98% in all read rate. Only 2% of text messages go unread. That's hard to imagine. Email is in the 50s now. It's not even in the 60th percentile. paper mail. If it comes back, we know they didn't get it, but otherwise, we don't know what they did with it. This is where we need to be, and we're already there, so it's exciting times. So let's talk a little bit about this idea of making it easy for a customer to report an outage, because we're so concerned with that quality of life, especially now with so many things hanging on electricity in the home. When you look at this, it's when I say to you, all right, to report your outage, text OUT to 877 da 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 da. That might be simple for some folks, but for some, it's a little overwhelming. I got to do what now? Hold on, where do I go? You sort of just throw them off balance, and it's a little too many steps for them. So what if it could be as quick and easy as when you go to a restaurant and there's a little QR code on the table and you take out your phone and now you've got the menu, right? COVID gave us that. If I had tried to launch QR codes before COVID, everybody would have said, what is it again? Now it's so second nature, right? It's like saying, oh, we'll have a Zoom meeting. Yeah, everybody knows what that is. So we created a code, a little QR code that you can tap or scan. So if you're on a desktop computer, you're not going to be able to text this, right? But you can take out your phone and scan it. If you're on your mobile device, you can't scan it because there's nothing to scan. So you just touch it, and it'll take you through and report your outage. So let's take a look at what that looks like. I'm on KUA.com here. You can see the instructions written out. Of course, it's a bit much, but there's that little QR code. So all you have to do is take out their phone, turn on the camera app, aim it at this, and it's going to go ahead and bring up a little text message and say, you're about to send a text message to KUA that your power's out, right? They agree, and then off they go. The system takes over from there and routes their outage. Fun and easy. No instructions, nothing else. We're also going to make that work on social media.
They have them on TV now.
Yeah.
They have the codes on TV. Just do this.
Yeah, you don't have to write. Nobody wants to write down a web address anymore. You got a QR code? That's the new standard.
From your screen.
So even on social media, we can do this. Now, social media, we had to do a little bit of stuff to make this work because it doesn't let me put a lot of my crazy little codes for text messages on Twitter or Facebook. We worked all that out. We worked with Tiffany, of course, to do some testing. We've had a couple of folks say it didn't work, but they weren't actually registered, so that was why. But we have the instructions there, but they do have to have their phone number on their account for this to work. But what this gives us, again, is that quick and fast way to get your outage reported. Now, what if we print that in the hurricane guide, and of course we are doing that, and we let people cut it out and put it on their fridge so whenever they have an outage, they just take a picture and they don't have to remember the outage number, right? Quick and easy, nice and handy. So I thought the cook should have to eat his supper. In this case, you being the board driving all this, you get to try this out now. So if you would, grab your cell phones and turn your camera app on and aim it at the screen. And if you report an outage, don't worry, I've already alerted dispatch that they may get a few. So let's try it out. You should see it go right through.
There you go.
Camera.
Camera app.
Send message.
No, don't say. If you want to, you can, but it'll actually walk you through the whole process. But you should get an almost immediate recognition of the QR code. It'll tell you the message you're about to send your outage to KUA. And when you send that, it's going to say this address. It'll verify, and then off you go with the outage being reported. Anybody not get that result? Great, because that's always the nervous part about this Bill Gates moment where you do something technical and it doesn't go the way you thought it would. What's that? Yeah, if you hit OK, it'll actually open it up like a text message. So what I just did was I reached into your phone and I told it with this QR code, open up the message, here's the phone number, type the word out, all you have to do is hit send. So one tap and send, you've reported your outage. And from there, all personalized experience down to the address of here's your outage, here's the outage time, here's what we're going to do about it, all updates, right? Nice and easy. Now, the goal is not this. This is the stopgap. The goal is that we text you when the power goes out, and that's under development right now. So I'm going on, and Brian's giving me the evil eye, so I'm going to wrap it up with that. But thank you so much, and if you have any questions, I'll take them at this time.
It's just so exciting, to get all this new.
The new KUA, yeah.
I have two quick questions. On the AMI Reconnect.
Mm-hmm.
I understand we use the term instant, but to me, instant, when I was a kid, for instant internet, it was turn on the internet, walk away, make some popcorn, and
right.
be done. So mm-hmm. What's the reality on reconnect
time? Transmission time?
Yeah.
Right now, our system, we built a really great system. The guys that helped us design the network for AMI, because it's fiber-backed and all that, we are under a minute in terms of transaction time. From the minute we click something on the screen to the power actually happening on or off at an address, under a minute. So the code will be almost instantaneous. So I would say a minute, maybe two maximum, just to give some room for a busy day. So about 2 minutes would be is how quickly your power would be back on from the moment you hit your payment.
So my question is, you know, I work in a hospital, so I have crazy shifts. I can be home at 1 a.m., 2 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
Say I fall into that category and it slipped my mind. When I'm trying to do the reconnection, is it communicating to the customer, please allow X amount of time so they're not, when is it going to come on? When is it going to come on? Or is it just click and then that's it?
It's a great idea. It's a great comment. Yeah, we can certainly put something in there where we maybe alert them. If your power is off, you know, allow 5 minutes or something for up.
Just so they're not in limbo because, you know, I think this is fantastic. It's a great idea that you can reconnect that fast. But since it's just rolling out,
right,
a lot of these people are going to be like,
you said it was
the
instant, right? And I think, and again, we always want to set that expectation, right? We want to let them know, like you said, how long is too long to wait, or am I just being impatient, or is it truly coming, and so forth. Now, they'll always have the ability to report the outage and call into dispatch. We'll always be there for them, and it's the same phone numbers. But we want to set that expectation. So I think as we fine-tune that, I'll incorporate that idea of try to set the expectation right up front if you're in a disconnect, you know, status. And also when you're letting them know that only full payments will work. If you
right.
send us a dollar, the lights don't come back on.
Right. Is it disclosing to them, we'll reconnect your services, but it has to be paid 100% in full.
Right. So we'll integrate that as well in terms of the communication. But I think it's a great idea.
And then the other question I had, when you were talking about read rate on text messages, how do you guys even get that information?
There is a national – now, we got it from our vendors, TextPower, who they do nothing but texting. They're our channel for all of these things. In fact, they heard about our QR code idea. And they're going to adopt it for a lot of the utilities that they work with around the country. So it's kind of fun. And we've been invited to speak at CES Week on their panel. So that's kind of – I like being at CES Week. That's a –
They're going to pay us royalty for the
idea? Boom.
Oh, that – well.
That's part of the strategic plan.
There's your new revenue. Mission accomplished. There's a new revenue. I don't know how much we'll get for a QR code, but it's just I think it didn't occur to a lot of people to try QR codes. But all good ideas, and I don't know if I missed any. I think we got them all.
That's it. That's
but I appreciate your input. That's all.
Jeff, a question, I guess, to Brian, Susan, and you. Are we adjusting the cost to the customer for the immediate installations versus sending a truck out to do that?
Are we offsetting
for
the
reconnect?
Cost?
No, for any connect.
You want to speak to that?
Yeah, you want to? You just ran out of Jeffrey.
Not at this time. We were waiting until we were 100% deployed, and then we will review those. However, you know, those customers that are having a lot of reconnects and disconnects are using the system more than others, and so one school of thought is that they use it more, so they should pay a fee, but we aren't sure whether or not those fees are going to change. But we will review them as soon as we get 100% deployed.
But I was talking also about the first connect, the first time a customer is connecting, which is basically instant. You pay and you do your information and you get the line immediately up.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you are still being charged a fee that says connection fee.
Mm-hmm.
Which there is really just a turn of a button, I guess.
But there's a cost for that system and purchasing it and operating it and maintaining it. And so all of the fees will be reviewed, whether or not they're the right amount. But, again, we do still need customer. We need to pay for that system.
Okay. Thank you.
There is a cost.
I know there is a cost, but I think a lot of people are already complaining. Well, they charge me. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
Well done, Jeff.
Mr. Brian, anything else? Anybody else has any more questions?
No, I think, Madam Chair, we're at Hear the Attorney.
Okay, Hear the Attorney.
Real quick. Most of what I have is legislatively oriented. Thank you for participating in the APPA virtual legislative rally. We had a good meeting with Senator Rubio's staff yesterday. In terms of, we're not going to have a rally in Tallahassee this year. The state capitals, for all intents and purposes, closed to the public. But there's a lot going on. I've had a chance to virtually meet with our new representatives, Arrington and Hawkins. Meetings with them. They're very voice, very receptive, and I got to talk to them about our concerns, particularly with 5G small cell wireless pole attachment legislation. A bill has been dropped. It's House Bill 1239, and it's a nightmare from our perspective. One of the things it does is we already have existing agreements with telecom companies that sign agreements with us to attach their 5G wireless antennae to our poles. And this legislation would reopen them up and require us to renegotiate terms that are more favorable to the attachers. I can't think of anything worse. It dictates to us that we will only charge the FCC mandates when, you know, up until very recently we haven't been subject to FCC regulation. And it, for example, it puts shot clocks on how long we have to respond to an application. For example, for a pole replacement, it's 90 days. 90 days to replace a pole. That might sound like a long time to some people. That's a very short time. When you think that everything else we have to do in terms of making sure our system's reliable, hardening it for hurricanes and everything else, it is a, I've seen some bad bills in my 18 years. This is one of the worst. So our folks in Tallahassee are fighting it, and we may need enlisting you all to fight it as well. And that's all I have.
Thank you. Any questions? Mr. General Manager?
I've got nothing other than the reminders that are there on your screen. You'll note that the APPA National Conference has obviously been relocated from Chicago to Orlando, and we'll be getting something out to all of you to gauge your interest as to whether or not you want to attend in Orlando June 20th through the 23rd. It's a virtual. It's the same conference virtually. A couple of weeks later, I guess they're going to do. It's the same. I think it's some recordings that they're going to do from the in person that'll be available at a later date. Is my understanding?
No. It's going to be different.
Is it?
The speakers are different.
Is that correct? Okay.
Yeah, it's different.
So there's two.
Yeah, it's shorter, but it's two. You know.
Okay, that's what I was wondering.
Yeah.
Both at the
No, one is in person and the other one is virtual.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, directors, any comments, Mayor? Olga.
No.
Mayor. Okay, no. Ginny.
It was a good meeting. I will say it was a very good meeting.
Yeah. Ray?
Nope.
Ray? Raymond? Okay, so now we go into the management item, management review item. Is Cindy going to drive this one?
It's just a
plus board.
Yeah, it's a board discussion.
So
board discussion and action.
Right.
So everybody else is leaving, right?
Looks that way.
Okay.
Okay. So I guess we're going to have a summary. Cindy, you're going to open it, or are we just going to summarize what we discussed?
How do we move forward? Is the question.
And Grant, if you can also give direction on this, you would need to motion.
What's being presented?
Discuss what they thought might be a reasonable form of compensation.
I move that we give our CEO a 4% raise.
I second.
Okay. Anyone's in favor?
I got a question.
Okay.
Is this 4%, which includes the 1.5, and then the pay raise is 2.5 for a total of 4 or 4
first,
top?
April 1st. Salary by 4%.
Okay, total. Okay, I just want to make sure that it wasn't
yeah.
the one that was going to go plus.
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, so it's been seconded by Raymond. So anyone in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any against it? Nay. There is no nay, so it's been approved. Okay. The CEO would receive 4%. effective April 1st. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
So I guess the meeting is adjourned.